Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
First though this morning, Laura Whitmore from Bray in County Wicklow came to our attention first back in 2008 as an MTV presenter. She's now a household name on TV in the UK. She's done shows like Love Island, Celebrity Juice and Laura Whitmore Investigates. But this summer, Laura will be coming to the Three Olympia in an acting role. She's in 222, A Ghost Story. Laura Whitmore, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam. How are you?
Fantastic. Listen, I'm really interested in this. Explain 222 to us. There's a dinner party. People are talking and drinking. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, it's a great play that's been hugely successful in the West End, which is where I first did it a year ago. And I actually went to see this show as a punter in the audience. And it's all centered around these two couples over one night at a dinner party. And yeah, 222 is a number that pops up. It's a time that pops up. And it's almost a countdown to that particular time in the play. And it kind of starts off quite tame and then it escalates and it raises a lot of questions, which I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of twists within it. And do you know what I love about this show? I remember when I did it in the West End, you'd be leaving stage door and sometimes I'd leave stage door and I'd kind of like have my hat on and I'd be walking through like Piccadilly Circus and I'd see people coming out from the show and everyone would still be talking about it. Like, what do you think the end is? What do you think that means? And I love it. It's one of those shows you can't stop thinking about. It's written by the brilliant Danny Robbins, who's a good friend of mine. And he does a lot of podcasts for the BBC around the paranormal. And he's written podcasts before that raise questions. Do you believe in life after death? Or, you know, or is there an answer to everything? Can you explain everything?
And as you said, you've done this play before, Laura, in the West End, but have you switched roles this time?
Yeah. Do you know what? So basically I remember it was actually the summer I was in Mallorca doing Love Island at the time, and I had seen the play and loved it. My husband's friend, James Buckley, and actually he's returning to the West End as well. He was in it. And we went to see him in it. And I loved it. And I actually got an email from, I have an acting agent, and they were like, would you be interested in auditioning for 222? So I think I was in between, like, you know, recoupling couples and then trying to do an audition via Zoom. And I was approached by playing the role of Jenny, but I actually asked, could I audition for the role of Lauren? So I ended up being offered the role of Jenny, but there's a bit of me that always wanted to play the role of Lauren. And if you see it, both are brilliant. Brilliant roles, but there was a bit of me that always wanted to play the role of Lauren, who's probably a little bit older than Jenny. So I got cast as Jenny, loved it, spent 18 weeks doing it in the West End, which was just, you know, brilliant experience. And it was the first time I've ever done anything like that. And I got approached last year about bringing it this summer to Dublin, and I said, what about me playing the role of Lauren? Because it just makes it new for me as well. And if anyone had seen it before. So yes, I'm coming back in a different role. So I think I'll come back again next year and play the lead male part. Who knows?
And listen, most people will know you probably mainly as a television presenter, but you had a good bit of acting under your belt already. You were in Queenie and another TV drama called A Mother for an Hour. But were you on the stage before this play?
So I actually did a few years ago, I think it must be about 5 years ago now, I did a tour, a UK and Ireland tour, and I came to the Bord Gáis and did a week of a play based on a Peter James novel called Not Dead Enough. I played the role of Cleo, and I love that. And I love theatre. And, you know, I grew up, I remember as a child being quite, believe it or not, shy. And my mother said that the teacher said I was very quiet in class. So she sent me to drama lessons when I was 5. And she said I came home a new woman and I wouldn't stop talking. But for me, life, theatre, you know, theatre is live and it kind of draws a lot of comparisons to live telly. And for me, live theatre is always, you know, I've been very lucky to, I've started to kind of cross over and do a little bit of more, you know, telly work and film work. But live theatre, it's just different. It's a different kettle of fish because anything could happen, like live telly shows.
I would think it's terrifying though. Like, I do live TV like you and it's frightening enough, but live theatre on a stage, I think I'd be terrified.
I don't know. There's some sort of, safety in playing a character, particularly the character of Lauren, who I'm playing in 222 this summer. You know, she's a little bit out there and you can kind of push those boundaries a little bit, and I can kind of, you know, use that and get away from Laura that people know and kind of have a little bit more freedom in a character.
Which is interesting, without giving too much away about the play, how open are you to the whole notion of ghosts? I mean, do you actually believe in them yourself?
Oh, I can't give too much away now. But I am Danny Robbins, who wrote the play. I actually went as a guest on his podcast about the paranormal. And it's like, whether you believe in something. And if I'm honest with you, I do believe in something because I think I have to. I don't know what that is. And I think, you know, growing up, particularly in Ireland, we've so many different stories and different legends. And I'd like to believe in something, something good, I hope. And that's really, that's what the whole play is about. It's about these two couples having this conversation and disagreeing. And I don't know. I believe in something, though. I definitely think this play makes me question things. And it's made me question things even with my friends and family who, like, I'd be quite open about believing in something or some sort of afterlife or whatever that may be, or reincarnation. I don't know, but I'm open to something.
Listen, I know one of your favourite things as well, Laura, is you listen to true crime podcasts. Why do you love them? And I know it's a thing you and your husband Ian do together too, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's probably one of the biggest genres when it comes to film and podcasts. Actually, there's a lot of true crime podcasts out there. And, you know, I come from, like, I worked in music and entertainment shows. And one of the things that my husband and I have in common, because my degree is actually in journalism, and my husband's degree, believe it or not, he's a stand-up comedian, but his degree is in law. So he's a degree in law. So it's like, and look at us now. But we end up having these just mad conversations, I don't know, when we're watching a true crime film or something or a documentary, and he'll know some mad fact about the law, you know, how the law is different in Scotland and different things that people have got let off because of a loophole. And I love asking questions. And I think that's, you know, my background. I started off in a newsroom and I've kind of worked my way. I've interviewed lots of different people, from movie stars to actors. But, you know, I started out with, you know, politicians, and I just love asking questions. So between the two of us, this is just like, it's kind of like date night. Does that sound like a bit weird?
No.
But it's kind of what we love to talk about. And it's, you know, it's, you have to be careful because it's a very sensitive matter and we're talking about real cases and real people. But we always try to kind of look at, I love the psychology of things, which is actually another reason why I love acting, because I love, you know, looking at a character and, you know, looking at them below surface level. And I think the same with crime and criminals. I think if you go back, if you look at them as a child, has there been behavior in some way, and could you have stopped this thing from happening? So yeah, that's like our little date day. We do a podcast to talk about true crime, the weirdos that we are.
How do you find working with your husband?
I think with this particular, with the podcast, you know, we had been, you know, as a married couple, there's a lot of married couple podcasts out there. And I'm like, me and Ian, we can fight about the bins privately. We don't need to do that on a podcast. So for us, it's something that we would, like, I think Ian is a really clever man and he's got, you know, a fountain of knowledge. And I think I would do it with him if we weren't a couple, because I find him really interesting. And it's, for us at the moment, it's been kind of lovely because we've worked, you know, because we worked on the same show before with Love Island, but we actually never worked together, because he would be in production because he does voiceover and I used to film out in Mallorca and in a studio in London. So we never actually spent time together. So for us, this is like a little, as I said, like a little date day. It's quite lovely. It's like a little catch up. He's been on tour recently and then I've been working on another project. So once a week we get together and we like have a little us time and, you know, just happen to record it. So it's been good because he's the perfect man for us, you know.
Where did you actually meet him?
I mean, that's a very good question. And actually, Miriam, if you ask both of us, we come up with different answers every
really?
Time. Yeah, we met at the BAFTAs, actually. We met at the BAFTAs years ago. However, there is a panel show, an ITV panel show from 2012 that we're both on. I just don't think I realized it. I don't think we made the connection. Or he says he made the connection, but I didn't. Because Ian started out as a children's television presenter. It was like a different lifetime ago. So I think that we always say we met at the BAFTAs when we had our first proper conversation.
And I know you come back home a lot, Laura, but sometimes we have this notion of all Irish TV hosts and Irish actors in London hang out together, have a great time. But I know you're really busy. So how much of that is actually true?
I mean, a good bit actually is. There is something, I don't do it intentionally, but I am drawn to Irish people, particularly when you, particularly when you're away from home. And I don't intentionally, you know, go, I'm just going to be friends with Irish people. I have a wider range of friends. However, I end up on a bar in Clodagh McKenna's pub with Imelda May doing an Irish dance? sometimes that happens. Just, my husband's always like, oh, how do you are? He's like, Irish people just are drawn to each other. So yeah, no matter where I am in the world, we kind of find each other. And there's a lovely community no matter where you go. And we do have a lovely time. And it's, yeah, it is always lovely to come home. This will be the longest I'll have been home because it's an 8 week run. And I think this is the longest I've been home since I moved to London 14 years ago.
And you spoke to Paddy Keelty in the Late Late recently, you know, about the importance of giving back, and you do loads of good events for the London Irish Centre. Is that important to you? Because obviously, I suppose a lot of the Irish people you hang out with, they're so successful, but there's a whole other underbelly of people who are older who went to London and things, you know, didn't turn out brilliantly for them.
Yeah, I feel really lucky that, you know, I moved away from Ireland, like kind of was very naive, like just moved over by myself for a year to make it in London. And I was lucky I got opportunity and I made good friends. But it can be, it's a big city, it can be lonely, and it's dog eat dog, you know, you can be left behind and it can feel overwhelming. And, you know, this is a lovely centre in North London in Camden that I'm an ambassador for, that do loads of great events. And, you know, they have the shop where they sell all the like home treats, and they do a little Irish toddler class, and they do lots of things. But they also, you know, they do a lot for the community of the maybe the older generations who came over in the 70s and the 80s and maybe didn't have it as easy. And they've some the beautiful stories about, you know, helping people who came over and then they wanted to go home and didn't have enough money for the ticket to go home. And then they paid for the ticket so they could go home to their family. And that's the thing about helping that community, that Irish community in particular over here as much as possible. So I think if you're lucky in any way to, like, I'm very privileged, I have a voice, and you may not want to listen to it, but I have a voice and I can speak up sometimes. And if I can in any way do that, whether it's to help, you know, any community that is finding it difficult. I'm actually, at the end of the month, I'm hosting an event for Focus Ireland in the Olympia, Rock Against Homelessness.
Oh yeah.
And that's a fundraiser for Focus Ireland. And I mean, if we didn't have Focus Ireland, I mean, the state at the moment of people out of homes, particularly young children who've nowhere to live, is just atrocious. But the work that Focus does is so vital, and it's these events that kind of raise it. So, you know, I just show up for a day and can help out. And if that in any way, it's not much, but if that in any way does anything, like, why wouldn't I?
That's a great event, actually. I know Barry Egan's very involved in the Sunday Indian. We spoke actually to Corinne Bailey Ray recently, and she's going to headline it, I think.
Yeah, she is. And I think music is a great way of bringing people together as well. And I know all the funds of the ticket sales, like, that's going to go to Focus Ireland to really help house people. And sadly, you know, I did look at the numbers recently, and it has increased, particularly since lockdown, of young people who are out on the streets. And this day and age is just, I just can't, particularly as a mother, to imagine that a child is left out vulnerable on the street. And I think, as a small country, there's a lot that we can do.
Now, since we last spoke, not that long ago, you've had a little girl.
I have had, I know, I've got, I'll never forget, I don't know if I can say it, I'll never forget, you DM'd me. Do you remember what you DM'd me?
Remind me.
You said, take the epidural.
Oh yeah, that's the only advice I ever give any woman, epidural.
It's the best advice. It's like, don't be a hero. Don't be a hero. It's like, would you not take the painkiller if you had a broken leg?
Yeah, I do remember. I say it to every pregnant woman. I really believe it. But listen, what's
best
your name?
Advice.
And has your life, and we all say when you have a child, your life changed utterly, but do you find it has changed utterly, Laura?
Yeah, it has. And it's like, I've always been quite protective over that side of my life. I think because I, particularly at the time when I was pregnant and I was working on like a big reality show, hosting it, that I feel like everyone kind of thinks that they are entitled to like a part of your life. And I became very protective. I remember I had like paparazzi to start trying to take pictures of my baby. And I was like, I'm sure this is illegal, you know, to print pictures of a child without their, I didn't really know the law, but my husband does. I'd ask him those questions. You know, we have more rights than we think. But one of the things I was always told was, as soon as you post a picture of your child's face online, like, any person can come up and take a picture of them and print it in a newspaper, which I didn't know, because otherwise I'd be posting every single picture under the sun. So it's just, for me, I just became a little bit more protective and probably considerate about how much of my life I give away and how much I keep to myself. And with, you know, when you see horrific things happening the other side of the world, and you look at the women in Gaza and the suffering that those children, I think I'm even more aware and even more sensitive to things like that. I mean, everyone should be sensitive to that, but I feel like even more, I'm definitely more emotional and protective, and probably get angry much quicker than I did before.
Now, I'd say your mum is delighted. I believe she's been brilliant with your daughter. And the fact you're going to be back here for 8 weeks, is she quite excited about that?
I stupidly mentioned that I was offered this role last summer, and the whole last year, it's just been, are you going to do it? Are you coming? Are you going to do it? Do you need to find somewhere to live? I'll take the baby. I'll take the baby. It's not even a baby anymore. So yeah, it'll be wonderful. And, you know, I love being back home. You know, I love it. But there's also a bit of me that the opportunities that I get living in London are just brilliant. And I'm very lucky to keep getting them. But to be able to bring this show that I did in the West End to Dublin is lovely, you know, and I'll definitely have every single member of my family come. My mother's the youngest of 13, so we'll probably fill up the Olympia for like a month anyway with just cousins. It'd be lovely to be back home for that amount of time during the summer. So if you could just make the weather nice, that would be lovely.
I think we're going to have a great summer, Laura.
Great.
Laura, thanks so much for chatting to me today. And 222, A Ghost Story, is opening in the 3 Olympia on Thursday, the 20th of June. It's going to run until Sunday, the 11th of August. Tickets on ticketmaster.ie. Laura Whitmore, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Miriam. Always a pleasure.